life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
Broadcasting from the Mayhem Moon, it's Dynamite in the Brain with your host Brian Smith and special guests Anthony Askew and Marvin Lafayette.
Hello.
That feels weird.
Well, being a guest, not a host.
Yeah.
Well, take like... less responsibility there.
The intro felt like 15 times shorter because it was only one name. I was like, what's going on?
I could be a troublesome guest.
Well, I think technically we already had two. Righty-ho, on to our continuing run-through of Samurai Champloo. We're on to part two now, so this is episode 7 to 12, because episode 13 is a two-part episode, so this was a good place to stop. But also, episode 12 is a recap, so really we're only going to be talking about 5 episodes.
Oh, it's more than just a recap.
Okay, so we open up with episode 7, A Risky Racket. Directed by Tsuyoshi Yoshimoto, who we previously saw on episode 2. And the screenwriter is Seiko Takagi, and she is the author of the Samurai Flamenco tie-in manga and A World Is Still Beautiful tie-in novel. And our guest star is Shigeru Shibuya, the voice of Gene Starwind from Outlaw Star as Shinsuke. And this episode is all about a son who is a pickpocket. And he pickpockets to steal money to help his mother, who has a case of the anime coughs. She's so coughing, she can't work. And there's no furlough in Edo times.
There's barely a furlough in this.
I was going to say, yes. Well, yes, I think I'm not so much this, but maybe Asherah is more an appropriate analogy for these times. So this is that's the plot of the episode. Guys, what do you think of it before I tell you how much I disliked it?
I started watching, I thought, oh, I'm sick of this trope. And then by the end, weirdly, I think it's because it felt well executed. I don't think you could really mess up this trope of like the stealing for someone who's sick, so you feel bad at the end. But by the end, I was kind of, oh. So I guess it did what it was setting out to do. So I half praise it for that, but it's not great.
Yeah.
I must admit, considering that this trope is universal and well used in the anime world, they did it well. Like, it's not a boring episode. It's just a story that you've seen a million times before.
Yeah. Whereas my notes read, this is a boring episode.
But it's not badly done. Like, at first I was like, ugh. Because you know how it goes. Oh, this guy's a dick. He's stealing money. But oh, wait. It's for his sick relative or whatever.
Yeah, the thief
and
with
think,
the
I
heart
like the
of
payoff
gold.
At the end. Yeah, and I think... I was kind of sad at the end. So it must be doing something right, unless I'm just so soft these days that even that gets me.
Well, it does make a nice difference because, you know, through all of the previous episodes and, well, maybe not all of them, but most of the previous episodes, when you've got someone who, you know, the gang tries to help out or, you know, one of them does, at the end they're always sort of sailing away or, you know, waving to them on the horizon and they go off to do other things. And it's nice to have that sort of gut punch of, you know, he gets a knife in his belly. You know, oh, maybe not everyone gets a happy ending.
There's also... The reason it escalates for this kid is because he accidentally... pickpockets a opium dealer. And that's why it
accidentally
drops.
He knew what he was doing.
No, he didn't. He was surprised when he saw what he got and then he was struggling to get rid of it.
Wow.
My favourite bit is right at the start when they're in the gambling house and arguing over what they should bet on, and so the squirrel just places the bet instead.
Yeah, my first note written down is just squirrel bet smiley face.
And don't forget, Fu is dreaming about her mother.
Yeah.
So it's not just a worthless episode.
Yeah, that might be the only good bit, because my other note was like, the animation feels so conventional in this episode to what I'm
considering,
expecting.
considering what's coming up in like the following episodes animation-wise, yes, this episode is a bit of a disappointment by comparison.
Yeah, even a lot of these episodes, I was like, is it just because I'm watching a Blu-ray and it wasn't made for high definition? Or I'm watching the Netflix stream, and again, it wasn't made for high definition, so everything looks a bit softer. And I was like, oh, and then I got to episode 11, and I was like, oh, no, it's just the other episodes aren't as good as the first batch we watched, because episode 11 is fucking amazing. But this one wasn't. This was my least favourite of the bunch, I would say, of this batch.
It's still not over. I mean, you get the stuff with Fu, where she's kind of, like, speaking to the mother of the boy, and she's like not breaking the news that he's actually a thief at this point. And I like those aspects of kind of learning more about the characters. So I think it's a good vehicle to make me want to like Fu even more, because I think she's great. So
right, let's crack on to episode 8, because I can't remember if I mentioned actually on the recording, but we're recording this during my lunch break. I wish it was the time when I wanted a dinger so I could go ding next episode.
What the hell's a dinger?
like a bell on the like when you go
oh,
to.
I thought it was like a microwave burger or something.
No,
I don't know what they're called. They've got a rustler's burger or something. A dinger.
A dinger burger.
Yeah.
Like, I know we're on a limited time. I was on a Discord call in a Twitch stream. Where we had like one or two American people in, and the English streamer was saying one of his stream goals, if you reach it, he'll eat 10 Rustler's burgers in a row. And so they were all the Americans were confused. What is a Rustler's burger? You had to link him in the Discord chat and everything. It's like, if you called it a dinger burger, they'd be five times more confused.
I could eat 10 Rustlers off the truck.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I could eat one.
See,
in them to fill you up. It's great.
When he announced the goal, I said I could easily do five without even thinking about it, but 10 might be a bit of a stretch for me.
Oh, they just turned my stomach thinking of them. Episode 8.
Episode 8.
The All Art of Altercation, directed by Keiichi Sasajima, director of episodes of Decoder, Blue Gender, Aquarian, and Deno Coil. And our screenwriter is the returning Dai Sato, who we previously saw on episode 5. And our guest star for this episode is Koichi Yamadera, obviously most related to the people working on this show as the voice of Spike Spiegel. And he is playing Sagan Shogan Nagamitsu, a singing samurai and glasses hunter.
What's his wife? Who's voicing his wife?
I did not look that up.
Because I was convinced it was the voice of Fujiko. And I was like, Brian will have it.
No, I don't think it was the voice of Fujiko, because I think the current voice would be too young at this point. And I think it may have been somebody, but in general, I think there's generally like one big voice they've got in each episode.
It was an AI voice. Generated lines.
So,
I
want to
know who it is now, sorry.
Well, look it up yourself on your own time.
It's lunchtime. You're not even getting paid for this, are you, Brian?
I'm not. There's this singing samurai, and he has two beatboxing henchmen, and he's going around attacking people with glasses. And it just so happens at the start of the episode, our gang are short of money, as they are in pretty much every episode, and they've gone to a pawn shop and they're trying to pawn off various things, such as Fu's lacquer case, Mugen's swords, and then finally they're going to try and Jin's swords, but then it turns out the thing which is the most valuable are Jin's spectacles, because they're like a very rare construction. And of course this means he hasn't got glasses on for most of the episode, so therefore the guy who's trying to hunt him specifically down, this singing samurai, just passes him by, has conversations with the gang, is trying to hit on Fu, and none of it works. Until
how old's Fu again? Because I know it's like a
15,
different time
I think.
And stuff, 15, right.
Yeah.
He's like four times our age. Well, no, maybe not four, but he's old looking.
He is. He also looks a lot like Space Dandy.
He does.
With the pompadour, and also like particularly his movements when he's hitting on Fu. Like the hand movements and the posing.
When you first said that, Brian, I was like, I don't remember this guy.
And then no,
as
I haven't either.
Popped,
and I was like, oh, yeah, okay, right, yeah. There's that background guy in Cowboy Bebop who looks like Space Dandy, and then there's this guy. So it's obviously like a long-standing idea in Watanabe's head. Dandy, yeah. My favourite bit in this is the guy who's constructed glasses in order to have a fight with this fella. Who looks like Kenshiro, but with glasses on. And then it turns out that Fu gets his story, which he has been writing. He's been writing his biography on scrolls, and then as she's reading it, he narrates it to her anyway. As they're in Roppongi Hills, which I was like, oh, is this guy like a parody of someone related to that development? Or people who hang out in Roppongi Hills? Because nowadays, if you went to Roppongi Hills, it would be a place to go. But obviously, this time, it's like there's actually nothing there. It is literally just hills. And the other guy's plot is that a woman is seducing them in order to drug them and take their money. Who it turns out at the end is this man's wife. And so eventually they all end up at the pawn shop because they've got enough money to get the glasses back, and he's trying to pawn his
palanquin.
That's it. Which I was reading the anachronism page, and apparently, like, so much of his design is specific jokes. So he's doing everything that the royal things which are supposed to be limited to royalty. So wearing purple, having a palanquin. But then he's got the ricer aesthetic on top of that. So he's modded his palanquin with like the it's got spoilers on the back,
and the porn guy specifically says, "Oh, you've modified it to be a low rider."
Yes. and then it turns out his henchman had never been really his friend. He was just using him to hunt down Jin because he thinks Jin killed their master, which it turns out he did, but we don't know the reason why yet.
No. But Jin killed him anyway.
Yeah. And then the wife shows up and drags the singing samurai off. So he decides that he does not want to fight Jin at this point after he sees how tough he is.
She's intentionally made to look like an older Fu, right? Which links his interest with how
Yeah,
Fu
I think
looks.
You might be right there. I think, yeah. Yeah. This was a fun one, I thought.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Definitely. This is probably the episode where, before we like did this rewatch, I remembered the most. Like, whenever I think of Samurai Champloo, I think of those beatboxing backup guys that he has with him. And like the story with Jin and everything. Mm. It might not be my favorite episode of the entire show, but it's definitely one of my favorite eps. I like the fact that it turns into a Jin backstory ep, because it's very much, and I say this a lot, you know, my point of reference is always fucking RPGs, but it feels like you know, you're going along on an adventure, you're going town to town, whatever, and then you end up in this innocuous adventure that turns out to be tied to someone's backstory, and you end up getting a little bit more character development for him. I like how the format of this episode lent itself to that, and you end up learning more about Jin. You get a teaser of like his relationship with his master, the fact that he's like, I didn't betray him, but I did kill him. You're like, okay, there's more to learn in the few, you know, in a few episodes' time and whatever. I like it. I like it.
And you get to see Mugen and Jin hungover as well.
Yes. And she slaps their heads together, which is just unnecessarily mean.
I felt it. I felt it.
Yeah. I nearly vomited. It was terrible.
Then we get to episode 9, Beatbox Bandits, which almost feels like that should have been the title of the previous episode. But the director is Hirotaka Endo, who was on episode 4 last. Daisato's back as the screenwriter. Our guest star is Ichiro Nagai, the voice of Karin from Dragon Ball, and as Yamame. I think the older version. I didn't look who was doing the younger version. Yamane, who is this... well, when we meet him, he's been working at the Hakone checkpoint for 30 years. He's just about to retire. And then he's telling one of his underlings a story that happened to him 30 years ago. And then we go back to our main characters. It's like, it's weird having it opens. I was like, oh, we're going to come into the contact with this guy. I was like, oh, no, this is in the future. based on where our characters are. Of which, of course, the time period our characters in constantly fluctuates. This is an actual place, which is the, I think it's the remaining check, one of the most remaining checkpoints still in the country in Japan. So you could come and see the location that they use here.
I wonder if we could get through.
And so our heroes come undone when they get a forged pass to go through the checkpoint. And so, because of this, they're going to get executed by the guy in charge. But it turns out, as their narrator, who is currently an underling in this time period, that this guy loves executing people so much that he occasionally executes people he shouldn't have executed. Which are people with wanted bounties on them. And so he finds one where he's accidentally killed him. And so he basically bargains with them. If Mugen takes this head through this dangerous territory and delivers it, then all three of them won't be crucified. And so Mugen goes and takes the head. The narrator, as a young man, gets sent to follow him to make sure he doesn't just run off. Also, Fu immediately is like, is he going to run away? Asking Jin. And Jin just remains silent. And then Mugen runs afoul of a bunch of warrior monks pretending to be Tengu growing weed in the mountains. whereas this is the episode I definitely remembered, because, yes, it's the one... it's a recurring thing of Watanabe, isn't there? Of one episode where everyone ends up getting high.
This is a weird one for me, because for years and years I've always like romanticized this idea of like being in Japan, being a samurai, and like it's always sounds so cool. But the truth behind like the idea that they would crucify someone just for trying to cross a checkpoint, it just sounds so such a scary period of like you need papers for this. Like they mentioned later on that, you know, that would just sleep on the streets or like in the wild. Essentially, you need to have a proper lodging. I was like, I don't want to be in this time period. I've romanticized it for years, and then it's only just now I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to be there. Sounds scary. But yeah, I think it's a really good episode. It's got the Yuasa animation as well. I was like, oh, that looks like Masaki Yuasa, and it's like, oh, he did do the animation on that episode when Mugen's obviously super high. So
yeah, when they all get super high, and then the smoke ends up going down the mountain, and the punchline is that everyone at the gates end up getting super high as well. I can't remember. I don't know if they go into the details with the monks too much, but I guess they're supposed to be the same group of monks who show up in the various Sengoku period stories. I know they're in Ninja Girl and Samurai. Ninja Girl and Samurai Master. So I think they're supposed to be them. But yeah, it's just the other gag is the jogger who keeps on showing up at the start when Mugen thinks he's being followed, and he is being followed, and he turns around and it's a guy who says, I'm just jogging for exercise, for my health. And then later on when Fu thinks Mugen's finally returned to save them and get them free, it is just the jogger wandering through again.
And it's got that weird moment at the end where like the dude, the checkpoint dude, Yamano, or whatever he's called, he's reminiscing, like, oh, I wonder what that wild-eyed warrior's up to these days. And then it's just like, to be continued, then it's like a fake. It's a bit.
Yes.
I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, I don't know why I care so much in that one, but I was like, are they still alive? Yeah, I know how the show ends, but I was
they could be.
Invested. Would they, though?
Yeah, because it's only 30, years, it's only 30 years later. They're all younger. They're all about the same age as this guy. So,
well, yeah, I just think that this dude, I know it's 30 years ago, but he looks a lot younger than what I would expect him.
Yeah, he says, yeah, but he says how old he is in the start of the episode, doesn't he, though? He's like 60 or 70.
He just looks like a young boy.
Yeah, but I think that's just that haircut.
True. Mind you, if I had a horseshoe, I would look older. I don't think it would make me look younger. And he's got these weird glasses as well, where they're like a strap.
Yeah, I guess they're like specifically for the time,
yeah,
I would guess.
I mean, I could deal with that. I'd never drop off your face again.
Then we've got episode...
This is a winner of an episode. It's so good.
Yeah, I like the I do like the 30-year time skip framing for the episode with the narration from the future and stuff, and the animation of the fight where Mugen's getting high is really cool, where everything starts sort of stretching out and everything. Yeah. I really like that stuff.
I will say the fonts for the English graffiti bits in the titles have not aged well. They scream 2005 more than anything else, because I'm pretty sure I probably downloaded very similar fonts in 2005. Episode 10, Lethal Lunacy. Director is Akira Yoshimura, previously from episode 6. Our screenwriter is the prolific Tayuko Machida, currently on Seven Seeds on Netflix, but also Lucky Star, Wake Up Girls, Chaika, The Coffin Princess, and many more. And our guest star is Sho Hayami, the voice of Nicholas D. Wolfwood from Trigun as Shiryu. And this is Mugen versus a serial killer. Essentially, there's this street killer, they call him. This fella who's been getting into sword fights, but he appears to be cutting people without the sword contacting their body. And it is really weird watching this when there's very similar plots going on in One Piece anime at the moment. It's like hearing Zoro's voice in this and Zoro's voice in that. And because there's a serial killer in that, and also Zoro gets accused. It would have really been too similar if Mugen also got accused of being the serial killer. But then there's also another plot concurrently in One Piece with Luffy learning and the internal destruction technique, which pretty much matches exactly what they describe Hakai as in this.
He kind of half gets accused when he goes up to that dude who they think's the strongest, well, a super strong samurai, and they're like, oh, this is the serial killer. He's like, no. So he kind of half gets accused.
But yeah, they get taken in by a monk. And in return for chores, they can stay there because, once again, they've run out of all their money. And they discuss the killer and who the monk thinks it is. And, of course, Mugen is like, yeah, okay. I want some of that. I want to beat this guy up because I'm a madman.
But there's also money involved.
I think it's just because he's a madman. Particularly after he meets him the first time and gets hurt. And that just makes want to. But then we get the training techniques and the bit at the end when he's now finish this by meditating under a waterfall, and then looks at the waterfall and decides better of it.
I think it's got one of my favourite slapstick moments as well. Is at the beginning when they're working, like the bald guy, like the monk's bossing Mugen around, and he throws a cloth and it hits a statue and then falls through the door, and I was like, ah, that's my kind of comedy.
I like the fact that it lands right in front of Jin while he's doing his floor polishing laps.
Yeah. but yeah,
this is a great episode. It's a perfect episode.
It's a very good martial arts plot.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the guy wants to become more powerful. He goes to China. He learns this new technique and then comes back and kills a guy, and the monk who used to be in charge of his dojo exiles him, and he goes, why are you exiling me? I'm just doing what martial arts is supposed to do. And he's like, well, if you don't understand why I'm exiling you, that's why I've got to exile you. And yeah, this guy has just been driven mad with the power of the martial arts technique he learned.
Sorry,
go on.
No, I was just going to say, his design, Shoryu's design, I've written the note down, Fire Lord Ozai became a serial killer. Especially the before you get his full face, you just get the bottom half with the beard and everything, and it's like, that's so Ozai.
I guess it's got some, not my favourite character moments, but there's a really nice bit where after Mugen's done his training, and like, Fu and Jin kind of know what he's doing and stuff, and she's like, oh, well, don't forget your promise, and Jin's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be the one that killed you. And I think there's a moment there where, had I been watching this the first time round, I would have been like, shit, he might die here. But obviously, spoilers, he doesn't.
Yep.
But I don't know, I think there's so many little tidbits of good, little short conversations between the three of them that just helps develop the characters.
Oh, definitely.
A good, like, moment, that's a good moment.
Just little three-word lines that they say to each other, yeah, do way more to build their bond than a lot of shows where they
absolutely
have paragraphs.
Absolutely.
Like, just, like you're saying, the fact that it's like, you know, you're supposed to be helping me find the, you know, the samurai who smells of sunflowers, and Jin doing the classic sort of Sasuke Vegeta thing of like, it's me that's going to kill you, don't go dying out there. It's like, they actually care about each other, even though they're giving each other shit all the time.
Yeah, for sure. They smell of, the samurai smelled of dinger burgers.
He smells of raw meat, plastic cheese, and really bad sauce.
But I could eat 10 of them.
Yeah.
You're right, the sauce is the worst, yeah.
What? One of the
that weird orange lumpy here. Shit.
I'm going to get a Rustler's burger this afternoon.
This is why you're in lockdown, Ad. This sort of attitude.
COVID burgers.
I'm just pleased we're not the first area in the country to have been embarrassed by a second lockdown. That's all I've got to think.
But you also get a good view of, like, it's a nice reminder, because the serial killer, obviously, at the end is making the mistake of thinking that Mugen is a samurai and has honor, after he thinks he can finish him off after Mugen's sword, that both their swords go flying. Had not realized that Mugen is packing a second secret blade that he could just stab you in the stomach with. Because I don't think they've shown that blade up until this point.
No, not at all. Because I forgot. Like, I was thinking, how does he get out of this? And, you know, a bit of dirty tactics, but it's Wild West, basically. You're allowed to do what you want.
And then you get the first sort of... Because you don't get much of the sort of shonen tropes seeping into this show. It follows its own sort of... obviously, very similar to the sort of structure and humour and everything of Cowboy Bebop, for obvious reasons. But the shonen trope of, like, one of the main characters coming up against something they've never seen before that they can't beat, and then suddenly they can sort of learn it because they're so good at adapting to situations. So the moment where Mugen does the Hakai back and they both knock their swords out of each other's hands and slash each other's hands, it, like, if it was, you know, your Dragon Ball, your One Piece, Naruto, or anything, it's like, oh, here we go, now they're gonna, you know, put that in their own repertoire and everything. But here it's just like a nice moment because it's not something that's overplayed.
And I don't think it's ever used again, which is great. Like, it's not that kind of show.
Yeah.
Yes, this was a one I totally forgot about, and I was like, damn, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And then episode 11, Gamblers and Gallantry. Director is Seo Yamamoto, who was previously on episode 5. Screenwriter is Seiko Takagi again. And our guest star is, talking of Dragon Ball, it is Hiromu Suru, the voice of Bulma, as Shino, the woman who Jin falls in love with. And this is a Jin-heavy episode, and particularly after, like, how ungallant and how dangerous Mugen is like, oh yeah, here's Jin's character episode, and you're reminded, oh yeah, he's very much an opposite man to Mugen. And to further drive that home, Mugen's plot is that he is training a beetle to take part in sumo wrestling matches.
Now you laugh, but I cared a lot about that beetle. I cared a lot about that side plot.
I tell you what, the side plot itself, I might not have cared about it as much as you did, but the animation in the beetle battles had no right being as good as it was. Oh, I mean,
this is easily the best looking episode of these 12. Like, head and shoulders above everything else. And also, I think getting Hiromi Suru to play the character of Shino, I think that was really clever casting. Because I can't really think of another actress because of the Bulma character and where the Bulma character goes. I was like, oh yeah, that's the perfect sort of character for this sort of woman. Because again, it's not the sort of woman you see in a lot of anime as well.
No.
So yeah, this woman meets Jin. Jin recommends that you don't want to commit suicide off this bridge because you're just going to break your legs doing it because it's not deep enough water. And then she's like, oh no, I wasn't going to commit suicide. And he's off to his the job that he's found, which is working on an eel stand, which he turns up and he's given no training. So I don't know what the conversation was that he got the job.
he was under the impression he used it was a job where you could use a blade.
Yeah, he goes, I was told there'd be blade work here. It's like, yeah, there'll be plenty of blade work. Cut up those eels.
And then Shino shows up at the stand, and then she ends up doing all the work while he stands around barely learning anything. But they build up a rapport over the evening, and then she says, well, it was interesting memories, but now I've got to go and I'm going to be sold into prostitution tomorrow because my husband is a terrible gambler and he's lost all our money.
Boo.
And
got heavy Night is Short walk on girl from that scene where it's like one evening of like an interaction between people and it's like a memory and it's like like two ships in the night kind of thing, kind of like Before Sunset and Before Sunrise. And I'm a sucker for that kind of not on the nose romance, but there's like a bond between the two that is then just going to end when they leave each other. And I'm a sucker for that. I don't know if that makes any sense to you two, but...
Yeah, but Jin is not going to leave, and so he goes to see her the next day, but he gets beaten up because he hasn't got any money to be at the brothel.
He's a creep. He's a bit of a creep, really. Like, not to take away from his honour and stuff, and I know his intentions well, but at that stage, he's just creeping. Like, and even by the end, I mean, we'll get there, but I was surprised they slept together. I thought he was going to stay, like, abstain from that, but I was a little surprised.
So then, meanwhile, Mugen's been kicked out of the Beetle wrestling gambling den because he was too rowdy, so he's got his own Beetle that he's going to train by basically giving it Star of the Giants type exercises to do. Tying a rock to it and making it run with a rock behind it. and so the next day he goes back and wins. So Fu's excited, they've got some money, she don't need to spend all of it, they can pay the rent and we've still got plenty left. But then Jin asks to borrow the money after Mugen's stolen it back off Fu. And then he goes back to the brothel, and yeah, so he's now able... Suddenly the tone of the brothel owner changes when he sees the money that Jin's got. And they discuss the situation, and then they sleep together. But then the husband shows up. Like, either convincing him or convincing herself that she's going to stay. But when the husband shows up to demand more money out of her, and has like a very abusive attitude, basically says, I'm going to wring you dry of... we're going to stay married so I can wring every bit of money out of you.
He's awful.
He is awful. But that's the thing when, yeah, Jin says he'll be back, and then the next day they both decide to escape the brothel because he's discovered there's an island nearby with a divorce temple on it, and apparently if you stay at a divorce temple for 3 years, you're divorced. Beyond the normal look, they describe the law as it stands at whatever time this period is, that women can't ask for a divorce, it has to be the men. But I guess this was a loophole around that to stay at a divorce temple for 3 years. So we get the heroic rescue, but he can't use his swords when he gets chased after because he had to turn swords in when he goes into the brothel. So then Mugen and Fu... I think Fu's like, what's up with Jin? And then the pair of them decide they're going to investigate what is up with Jin, even though Mugen is like the feigning disinterest, but really he does actually, like you say, he does actually, they do care about each other at this point. Yeah. They're just too manly and closed off emotions to ever actually admit to it.
And Fu kind of admits to having a bit of a soft spot for Jin here.
Yes, which Mugen teases
then,
him her
about. And then they mention her breasts again. Mugen's like, well, give us a look then. Then he falls asleep. I love when he's training the stag with the rock. I could watch that all day. All day. Just make a show of that.
Oh, yeah. Like because Fu's discovered this because she's overheard a conversation the brothel owner was having at the restaurant she was working at.
She has a real talent for like accidentally stumbling into these two's business.
Yes.
Thankfully, though, because
it saves their lives over and over again.
And then it ends with Shino being cast away in the boat by Jin to the divorce temple. And then he gets his swords back and slices a bunch of dudes up because it's Samurai Champloo, and it wouldn't be Samurai Champloo if they didn't slice a bunch of dudes up every episode.
And there's a fantastic shot where when Jin kind of pushes the boat away.
And she runs along it. Oh.
And to grab it, like to kind of
grab his face.
Or, like,
It's so powerful. It's such a powerful shot.
Yeah.
The way that it's framed, and obviously you can't see her feet, but you can tell she's running against the flow of the boat being pushed away. Yeah. So well done. And even the three slashes as the guys run up to Jin after she's been pushed away, they happen so fast that they don't like break up the flow of the emotion at the end of the episode. I think one of my favorite things about this episode is like all the way through it, like you're getting like reams and reams of like emotion and agency from Jin without him having to say anything. Like there's like three proper moments where you see it, like when obviously when he's staring at her through the window of the brothel and stuff, the fact that he lets his face show shock for just a second when she says she's going to a brothel the next day, when he lets his facade drop and he starts manhandling the husband before she tells him to stop, and my favorite part in the episode is where, you know, she tells him to stop making trouble and stuff, and then the brothel owner's guys come out to beat him up, and at that point he's got his swords with him. He goes to grab him and he stops himself because he's like, I can't kill him, I'll just make life worse for her. So he just takes the beating. I love it.
Rough scene, that when he shows back up and he's all beaten and bruised and stuff. Yeah,
a lot of world weariness in that Jin and Shino's characters, both in the animation and I think particularly the say Hiromi Suru's performances. Shino, because as you say, Jin doesn't say much, so the actual vocal performance for Jin is not as impressive as the animation performance for him. but it helps that it's offset with the Mugen stuff, because I think it'd be too heavy without the Mugen stuff, and again it works as the contrast between their two characters. And I think after the next episode we get a two-part Mugen episode, if I remember correctly, of him running into people he knows from his past. Aren't they like trying to recruit him for some sort of job?
Hey, I can't remember. Be quiet. I want
to... Yeah, spoilers.
Seriously, it's some of these, it feels like a first time watching.
Yeah, I must admit, there's, like I said, episode 8 with the beatbox in the backup guys, that one is cemented in my memory. I think of that episode when I think of the show. But as you say, there are other episodes where as I'm watching them, I'm like, I don't even remember this at all. This is like a new experience for me.
And it could be that when I first watched this, I was after very different stuff from my samurai cartoons. So like these more sentimental episodes may have just been, there's not much fighting in this week's episode kind of thing.
Then we've got final episode for this batch, episode 12, The Disorder Diaries, director Hirotaka Endo, screenwriter Shinichiro Watanabe. It's a clip show episode.
It's more than that. I think.
The framing that they give, the conceit that they give the episode for the clip show is a very interesting way to do a clip show. Yeah. I'll give it that.
And some of the framing of the individual clips is also funny, like the suddenly bit where it starts talking about the Beat Generation.
All the random asides to like future history from their point of view, I guess. And then what happened to the guy who was doing the woodblock drawings,
Ukiyo.
Thank you. I couldn't remember the word.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff with that. Because I know for a fact I skipped this when I first was seriously. Somebody was like, "Oh, to recap." When it first came out, I can't remember how I was watching it. Oh, to recap. Don't bother watching. So I never did. So I think there's enough what I would consider enough additional content in terms of like learning a little bit more about Fu, a little bit more about like Jane and how they see each other and stuff through the diary, that it's worth a watch. I think there's enough of that to make it worthwhile, especially if you don't like the show, then why are you this far through? But especially if you're a fan of learning about the characters, I think it's worth the watch.
Yeah, the
and you get the sword dude back as well.
The detective guy.
With the dildo.
Yeah, I was going to say with the Saints Row 6-foot dildo on a stick thing.
And you get a little bit of history, as you say, because there's so many things in this show where it's like, is that a real? Did that really happen, or are they just like dramatizing that aspect of the history? But if I'm going to take for granted what they say is true, then you'll get a little bit of history in this episode too. It's a good one. Like it's as recap episodes go, this is a good example of how it can work in a way that's not too jarring, really.
It is still a clip show episode, though. And,
it is.
And the punchline is that Fu had written all this stuff in a diary because she knew that these guys were going to find the diary.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, she was playing a trick on them.
But all the little flashbacks of the previous stuff, you kind of get like the inner monologue of what that character's meant to be thinking at that time. So I'm sure there's a few clips where you see... where we didn't see that clip in the original episode, like where Mugen's going to fight the Shoryu dude, you see a few seconds before he leaves to fight, and there's like a little bit of a monologue with, well, not a monologue, a soliloquy? Yeah, would it be considered a soliloquy in this? Fu's inner thought, anyway. So I think there's something to gain from this one.
One thing that I really enjoyed... most clip shows, obviously, you know, they'll the character in question will think back or, you know, refer to something, and then you'll fade back and just show that part of the episode. The thing that I like best about this is that parts that Fu wasn't around for and didn't see get fast forwarded because she wasn't there. So how would she have written it down? I like that.
Yeah.
That's a nice touch.
Solid all round. Six solid episodes.
Four solid episodes.
which was the other one you didn't? Oh, the tropey one.
Yeah, I think I prefer the clip show more than Risky Racket.
God, you hate that one.
Yeah, I really did not like Risky Racket. Like I said, it was boring and it was not interesting to look at.
I'm sure there's a bit in that episode where like Mugen beats up a dude who looks like himself. There's a dude with like the exact same haircut and kind of build, and he beats him up. And I can't remember why that's in my notes, but it must happen. So I'm just gonna say it happened.
Yeah, once I realised this time that there was like tend to be like at least one standout guest star each episode, I did look up who I didn't notice the last time around. So episode two had got Masako Katsuki, the voice of Tsunade from Naruto. As Hotaru. Three and four had a bunch of them because it was the two-part episode. We had Ryo Zaburo Otomo, the voice of Crocodile from One Piece, as Ishimatsu, who was the other swordsman for hire. Fumihiko Tachiki, the voice of Zaraki Kenpachi from Bleach, as Ricky, I believe, was the bad Yakuza. And Hidekatsu Shibata, the voice of Baron Ashura from Mazinga, as the voice of Heitaru, who was, I believe, the good Yakuza. Episode 5 had... The artist was played by Shinichiro Miki, the voice of Kojiro, a.k.a. James, in Pokemon.
Ah.
And Joji, the Dutch fella... was Hayuchu Otsuka, the voice of Yazan Gable in Zeta Gundam and Gundam Double Zeta. But it's 10 minutes before my lunchtime's over, so it's time for Brian's game.
Oh, the Dinger Burger's going to go in the microwave after this show.
Video game ninja or video game samurai? Obviously, Anthony is an expert on video game ninja. Well, one video game ninja.
Any other.
His son, Sekiro. But I'm going to find out.
Son.
How... The great owl asks you.
Yes. I'm going to find out what these guys know about other video game ninjas and video game samurai.
This is Marvin is the biggest opponent, like probably the hardest of all the guests we could have on this show. Marvin's the hardest opponent for this game type.
I was going to say, I think I'll do better than some of the other ones where my knowledge of anime isn't as wide as you two, so I would never come first in the competitions. But this one, I think me and Askew, it'll be a tough time.
And I'm unbeaten right now. Just because I'm not the constant in the show, I'm in the podcast, I'm still unbeaten.
Yeah, I can't remember who won in the... We did one for the Stampede episode, but that's... So go and listen to the Stampede episode if you want to find out who won whatever the quiz was between Bradley and Dwayne.
I won that one as well.
By not showing up. So we start with Marvin. I guess Anthony's a guest now, so we can start with Anthony.
in alphabetical order. For a change.
Anthony. Yes. All you need to do, I'm going to tell you the name of a character from a video game. I'm not going to say what video game they're from. But you have to tell me whether they're a samurai or a ninja. Hayomaru.
Ninja.
No, samurai.
From what were they from?
Samurai Showdown.
Ah, I thought it sounded familiar.
Oh, listen to him.
Marv. Shadow.
Shadow? Ninja? Final Fantasy VI?
Yeah, that's correct.
Cool.
You don't get bonus points for knowing.
Anthony. I would consider it. Anthony. Mitsurugi.
Oh, from Soul Calibur. He's a samurai.
That is correct.
You don't get extra points for knowing, actually.
If I didn't know the game, I wouldn't have even pretended I did.
Marv. Armakuni.
Oh, I don't know this one. I'm going to go ninja.
That is correct. He is from The Last Ninja. He is The Last Ninja.
I would have said ninja there as well. That's such a ninja name.
Yeah.
Anthony Ayani.
Yep. Hayani.
Ayani.
Ayani. Oh, she's a ninja.
That is correct. From Dead or Alive.
Gary's clapping his hands now. He would have disowned you if he'd have gotten that wrong.
I thought he was going to say clapping his cheeks. Sorry.
Well, we know where your mind is with regards to Dead or Alive.
Probably the devs' minds are there as well.
Who are we on?
Marv.
Marv. Gajiro.
No, I don't know this one. Samurai?
That is correct.
Cool. They
are from Samurai Western.
Hmm. Not heard of it.
Anthony.
I haven't.
Taira no Kagekiyo.
Could you say that again?
Taira no Kagekiyo.
Trying to think. That's a samurai name. It's
wait, 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 wait. Brian, before you tell him whether he's right or wrong, I'm going to say I would have said ninja just because the word Kage is in it and Kage is shadow.
Well, Anthony's right.
Damn it, really?
Yes, from 1991's Samurai Ghost.
Yeah, see, I wanted to say that before I found out. Me being truthful.
Ninjas don't have long names.
I will say there's nobody from Bushido Blade in these, because I was like, I searched Samurai video games, Bushido Blade turned up. I looked at the Bushido Blade fandom wiki, and I was like, surely all these guys are ninjas. Marv. Joe Musashi.
Joe Musashi. I'm trying to think which Musashi, because Joe Musashi isn't Brave Fencer Musashi, if I'm remembering that right. Fuck. Joe Musashi. Ninja.
That is correct. From Shinobi.
Wow, I didn't know his name. I didn't know his name. Bloody hell.
Final one.
Joe!
Anthony. Apparently
his
so.
His first name is Joe!
Apparently so. If I'm wrong, this is the internet lied to me. For Anthony, Kenji.
Kenji, that's a short name, but oh, Kenji. Because Jin is a super short name for a samurai.
I was so going to say, you have to know exactly, exactly which Kenji I'm thinking of.
Kenji.
Because I'm sure there's probably
samurai.
Games with both. Samurai, you're correct. Way of the Samurai.
Fuck. Yes!
So it could be a draw if Marv gets this wrong, but if Marv gets this right, he's the winner.
Oh, I better not be like Ricky Maru.
It is. It
pretty
is.
Close. Scorpion.
Oh, man.
Oh, that is harsh. That's harsh. He's a ninja.
That is correct. Five.
When he's alive, he's a ninja, and then he's all kinds of things after he's dead.
Yeah. Damn, yes. That was a good game.
There you go. There's a lot more ninjas than there are samurai, I discovered when I was looking them up in video games.
Yeah.
Because quite often I was like, samurai video game, and just be like, unnamed protagonist.
Yeah.
Or you play a samurai. Okay, great. or they're just all historical people, like in the...
Joe Musashi, that's like... I'm shook. That is the name.
Joe.
And Musashi is a famous samurai, so I kind of don't like that it's...
Yeah, it's definitely someone like on the localization team just like, yeah, that sounds good.
No, in Japanese, Joey. Apparently it is Joe Musashi.
Damn.
Is Shinobi's flagship character and the original Shinobi. He is a returning protagonist that appeared in the first five Shinobi games.
I love Revenge of the Shinobi.
I think I only ever played the first one on the Master System. I never played any of the sequels.
Oh, Revenge of Shinobi. Fantastic.
Yeah,
game.
I think Revenge is the only one I've played.
Hmm.
Righty-ho. Anthony, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, Twitter and Twitch. They're both Ant Askew, and that's it.
Marv?
Instagram, MarvLafayette84, all one word.
Ooh, and, you're an Insta person now. Big Instagram
I've always plugged my Insta. Before, when I first guested on here, I said that I use my Insta more than my Twitter, which is, they're about even now. Mm. But I'm always posting stuff on Insta. Interesting shots. But on Twitter, I'm at Marvin Lafayette.
And on Twitter, I'm awesome_engine. And on Twitch, I am Let's Go Brian. But also, you can listen and watch the other podcast, Let's Go, at Let's Go JoJo Show on YouTube. That's the channel name.
You get to see Dwayne pick his nose for a full episode.
When the video freezes and I don't notice.
Yeah.
It froze again before we actually started the other day, and he had his finger on his nose again.
No! He's going to get the reputation of a nose picker.
But yes, you can now see me and Dwayne and a picture of Lupin the Third with a beard representing Niall when we record the episodes. Because for some reason he can't get the Skype put in a background thing to work. I don't know whether it's something to do with his webcam or what the dealio is, but no, me and Dwayne are happily sitting there with cartoon backgrounds behind us.
Yeah, it's great. I love seeing what's going to get picked each week.
I know. it's the most fun I have. It's picking the image. Otherwise, we'll be back with some more of this, probably in the new year. Some more Samurai Champloo.
Hell yeah.
That's the plan. Thanks for joining me. We'll be back with our next podcast on the Dynamite in the Brain feed will be the anime that didn't make us, which will be me, Gary, and I think Sheena. That is the plan. Right.
Are you going to say Shane for some reason?
yeah, same.
He likes his anime and stuff, but that would have surprised me.
Rightio. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.